Welcome to the Normal Birth Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Whipple. A few months ago, I had the pleasure of attending my 20th high school reunion, and if you haven't gone to yours, I have to say it was worth my time, if for nothing else than the opportunity to catch up with my old friend, Vanna. Vanna came right up to me, and she was glittering with excitement and proceeds to gush about my podcast. I was so floored. She told me she had some hilarious stories and we immediately made plans for an interview. So I was so tickled to have her on, and her stories are amazing. She had me cry laughing about being launched out of a wheelchair and drenching a nurse in embryonic fluid, but I'll let her tell them. Stay tuned.
Well, welcome onto my show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Vanna, and I am a fourth grade teacher at the school where I went to elementary school, and I'm in the fourth grade classroom where I was in fourth grade. So full circle moment for me. And I'm happily married to my husband, who also is a teacher.
Okay.
And he also preaches at our church, and we lead worship there and sing. And we have a farm with lots of cows and horses, and so all of that, yeah, takes up our time. And our two lovely children, Kaylor is 8 years old, our son, and Vela, our daughter, is 5. So that's a little bit about me.
They are precious. I loved your Halloween photos.
Oh yeah, we like to do it up at Halloween, do a family costume thing. It's really fun. Yeah,
super cute. So have you always wanted kids?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I was born wanting kids as long as I can remember, my whole life, and especially like the pregnancy part. Like, I dreamed of being pregnant, and that was a huge life goal for me above and beyond anything else.
So what was that like for you when it came down to you? Time to start.
Well, I have to say, I kind of went into things with a high expectation of everything just working out perfectly the first time you try. I come from a family of women where it worked out that way for them. And so that was my expectation. And I don't know if it was the time of things. I just didn't hear a whole lot of women that struggled very much. I don't know if it just wasn't out there as much as it is now, or, you know, I just wasn't listening. I just didn't really realize that was a normal thing to, you know, for it to take a while. And so we kind of, you know, planned it out, decided this was the right time to go ahead, and it didn't happen right away. And then month after month, it wasn't happening. And this became, I would say, one of the biggest struggles of my life and one of the lowest points. I think I just had an unrealistic expectation that I didn't realize was unrealistic at the time. So I had like my yearly appointment that was coming around anyway, and with my gynecologist. And so I went ahead, of course, and brought that up with her and told her that we had been trying for just a couple of months and nothing had really happened yet. And she, you know, of course, she acted like it was no big deal and it was fine, and this kind of thing takes a while. And I just didn't really realize that. So that was my first kind of, oh, so everything should be okay. And she said, yes, totally. You just keep doing what you're doing and things will just happen when it works out that way. So I will say that when things are not happening, you know, and you're expecting it to, your period comes, it's just a devastating feeling.
Yeah.
And when you've never had a child, you just have this overwhelming thought of, can I ever have a child? And maybe this is not going to happen for me. And that was a despairing thought that I had a really hard time handling. And I finally, after about 4 months, which I don't want to, I know there are women out there that struggle for years, and I know 4 months sounds like nothing, but 4 months just for me was a horrible time. So I called my doctor back and she said, okay, so how about after 6 months? After 6 months, why don't you come in and we can look at maybe what could be going on just to give you some peace of mind. We'll go ahead and start just checking things out. So I think she just wanted to, you know, help me out a little bit.
Yeah.
So I knew 6 months was going to be the time. And lo and behold, I guess it was about our 5th month of trying. I was jogging outside one day on the street. We have a nice little road where we can jog and not worry about traffic too much. I was just in absolute tears, praying and praying and praying, just out of so much worry that this wasn't going to happen for me. And all of a sudden, while I was running and praying, I felt the Lord just speak to me. And He stopped me dead in my tracks and said, 1 year. And I just stopped crying immediately, stood there and just heard 1 year. And I took that to mean in 1 year, I will get pregnant, or in 1 year, it's going to happen. And in that moment, I totally had peace. I felt like the Lord heard my prayer and it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I went, ran back home, ran in the house and told my husband, the Lord just spoke to me and he said 1 year. And my husband took that to mean that in 1 year, the baby would be here. So he took it to mean as in we're going to get pregnant soon. And in 1 year, the baby would be here. And I thought, oh, well, I didn't, you know, take it that way. I just thought, yeah. Well, lo and behold, a couple of months later, I got pregnant and our son was born exactly a year from that day.
That day.
So, that was the beginning of our journey. And I just wanted to definitely share that piece of things because, women out there who are praying and feel like no one understands and no one hears you. And I would like to share from my story that it's proof the Lord hears you. So keep praying.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning.
I don't want to belittle anyone who has that feeling, even if it's just 1 month.
Exactly.
It's not just 1 month. It's 1 month that you were ready for something and you felt deep disappointment and rejection.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just so many questions. And
every month.
Every month. And it's every day of that month. Every minute of that month, you know.
People don't tell you like how to try to conceive.
Right?
So, I mean, how much information did you have at that
point? None. I knew like have sex and you will get pregnant, yeah. You know, and obviously I believe that stress can play a part in a lot of that, which is one thing that I feel like once I had that peace, I could relax and a lot of that stress went away. So I know that that is a huge part of things, but knowing when you ovulate, knowing how to find things out like that. I was researching like crazy when it wasn't happening. Just doing my own research and, you know, take your temperature and buy an ovulation kit, which are expensive or were back then. So I just did not know anything.
Now, I had a really good friend who was having some infertility issues, and she used to go out and buy the ovulation kits just so that she could get a positive test about something.
Oh, right.
She was like, I know I'll ovulate. I'll at least get something positive.
Yep. Well, it was interesting because when I had one of my ultrasounds in the beginning, they could tell which ovary produced the egg. They called it the ring of fire. They could see it lit up with all the little blood vessels of where the egg came from. And I loved that ring of fire name. And so it was my right ovary that produced that egg. And then later, when I had my daughter and they did the same ultrasound, it was the same ovary. And I just wondered, maybe I was only producing an egg from one side this whole time, which I know is one struggle women have when conceiving. You only produce from one side every month. So one side it's your right, and one side it's your 1 month it's your left. And so it's like every other month that you even have a chance, which I learned all about during this process. So I know I don't know for sure, but it just made me wonder, maybe that's why it took a little while.
Yeah, that's
But
definitely possible. And it's things like that that you would never even begin to know until you start going through this process.
And I got really lucky getting to have my first ultrasound at 3 weeks. So side note, I'm BRCA1 positive for the breast mutation gene for breast cancer. And I knew that prior to having children. But I had to get regular ultrasounds and blood work and MRIs and all these things. So during pregnancy, all that they would do is an ultrasound and blood work. And I was already scheduled to have that done once I found out that I was pregnant. And so I got an ultrasound at 3 weeks and got to see the little bitty on the ultrasound. That was neat.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Normally they make you wait, your 6 weeks or whatever before you come in. So I lucked out there.
What year was this?
2014 was when he was born. So yeah, 2014, I guess it was January 11th was the day we found out we were pregnant.
That's
So
you were pretty early on at that point if you got an
yes.
ultrasound at 3 weeks.
Yes.
Oh, that's fun. Tell me how the pregnancy went.
So I had a pretty easy pregnancy with him. Not much morning sickness. It was more like I just had to keep something in my stomach all the time. I carried crackers or whatever with me anywhere I went. So if my stomach ever got empty, I would feel a little nausea, but just ate a little bit here and there. And I showed right away. I at my 6 week mark, I promise you I was showing. Like people say it's like water retention maybe, or just things starting to move around and form. But I remember I had like a pudge at 6 weeks, and I needed to just we told people right away, and everyone kind of has a different feeling about that. But I would have wanted love and support and prayer had we had a miscarriage. So, telling people right away was something we wanted to do. I would not have been able to keep it a secret if something had gone wrong, and I would have wanted to tell people that as well. So we didn't keep a secret. We told right away, and I felt like I was showing pretty quickly. My husband is over 6 foot tall, and so because I grew so quick and I was all belly, people just always made comments about I'm probably going to have a large baby. And We used to make jokes about my sister was pregnant at the same time as me. She was just 3 months ahead of me, which was a cool experience to go through with her.
That is cool.
But we used to joke about how she would have her baby, and then 3 months later, I would have mine, and they would be in the same size clothes because my baby would be so big. But yeah, it was a great pregnancy, and I probably craved citrus orange juice. I could chug it by the gallon. That was my thing. Yeah.
I have a friend who has a theory. She guesses everybody's baby genders based on their cravings. And if it's savory sour, it's a boy. And if it's sweet, it's a girl. And
Well, I'm textbook of that. And I've had a boy and a girl, and that's exactly what it was.
she's pretty dead on with it.
I knew. So, probably about a month in, I had a dream that I was having a boy. And I was totally convinced the whole time that it was going to be a boy just because of that dream. And it was.
Did you guys find out ahead of time?
Yes. So, the earliest that this ultrasound place that did like the 3D ultrasounds was, I think, 16 weeks that they would do gender to make sure it was far enough along to be able to see everything. And it was my birthday month. And so my best friend for my birthday present bought me the 3D imaging where we could go in this beautiful room with this huge table and watch it on a huge big screen and have the big reveal. And so that's how we found out it's a boy. Yeah.
That's a
That
great
was neat.
predicament.
Yes, it was. Well,
All right. So tell me about the labor.
I decided to go through the midwife program at our local hospital. I had in my mind I wanted a natural birth if I could. And I liked the process through the midwife program, but I definitely wanted to give birth at a hospital, just in case of anything that were to happen. That hospital is about an hour away from where I live. And that was a little scary of just what if, if we needed to get there quickly, but felt like that was just gonna be fine.
First, you assume you have time.
Yes. I remember on a Friday, I was still teaching school and just suddenly feeling very tired and rough that day. Just wasn't a good day. And I hadn't really felt bad up until that day. Stayed off my feet as much as I could. Up until that point, I had had a lot of Braxton Hicks contractions. And they basically described the difference between a Braxton Hicks and like a real labor contraction is that you won't be able to sleep. Braxton Hicks, you should be able to sleep through them, like your body will relax and they won't wake you up at night. But if it's a real labor contraction, you won't be able to sleep. It will wake you up. So that was the kind of rule of thumb that I kept in my head. And it was true. So on this particular night, they were waking me up. And with my husband just sound asleep, I kept a time on my phone of just how many minutes that it was happening. They were very sporadic through the night. But about 6:30 the next morning, so I was like up and awake throughout the whole night, just timing them. But about 6:30 that morning, they were pretty regular, about 8-ish minutes apart. And I woke up my husband and I said, "We need to go ahead and call. I think this is it." So at that point, I said, "I'm going to go shower. I want my hair washed and I want my hair done. And who knows when I'll be showering again. I need you to go mop the floors. I need this house clean before we leave for the hospital. There will be people coming over as soon as we get back. We won't have time for any of that mess. So I took a shower, dried and fixed my hair. He was mopping the floors. And everything seemed great. They were still contracting every few minutes. But for real, by the time we got in the car to go, I was like screaming in pain. It was like for real. It's like you see in the movies. I mean,
Yeah.
it was for real.
Oh no.
I think we cut it close a little bit, but totally worth it. Needed that shower and it helped the contractions, the warm water. And I had kept a towel in my car for the like last month, just in case like my water broke or something like that happened in the car. So I sat in the back seat on a towel and just rode the way to the hospital. My water, however, did not break until I was in the hospital, which is a fun part of the story, I'll tell you. So my husband, with his flashers on and zooming as fast as he can, bless his heart, he got us there. And by the time we got to the hospital, I was at a 7 and thought it was going to be quick after that point.
Yeah.
But everything slowed down. Such a disappointment. Yeah, so we got there with my midwife and nurse and husband in the room at a 7. And so basically, the rest of that labor time in the hospital, they had told us that when you are having a contraction and like everything is like all of your muscles are tensing up, if you can just visualize a limp noodle and just try to make your whole body go limp. And they told my husband to press down on my shoulders while having a contraction, that would help just like release all that tension. So every contraction, he was helping press down, and it really helped me work through every contraction until finally everything would release and go limp. But man, those contractions like every minute or so. And so at this point, I was up all night going through this process. I was exhausted. So I basically would have a contraction, lay down, fall asleep. Wake up, have a contraction, lay down, fall asleep. Like literally was asleep between each one, which could have been part of why from 7 to 10 took a while. But the midwife would come in and check, and I was only at an 8. And then I was at an 8 for a while. And it just took a little bit of time. So then she came in and checked, and I was at a 10, but my water still hadn't broken. And so this was another thing that I did not expect or know or understand, because I thought water breaks when you're ready to have the baby. And I didn't necessarily think it was going to be like in the movies where your water just breaks all over the floor wherever you are, which could happen. But I just thought at this point, I'm at a 10. This should have happened. And so she came in and said, I'm at a 10, and would I like to start pushing? And sure, yes, let's do this. So I'm pushing and I'm pushing and I'm pushing. And I said, look, am I really doing anything? Like, I think I'm pushing, but I've never pushed before. And I don't know. I just didn't know if I was doing it right.
Yeah, if you aren't
I told the
having that
midwife.
urge, it's not a natural impulse. Like, it's not something you know how to do.
Right. So, let's see. At that point, I wasn't sure if I was pushing correctly. So the midwife, basically sat on the bed, right in between my legs to watch, and she could see and said, yes, looks like you're pushing good. I can see that everything's working correctly. You're doing great job. Let's try it again. One big push. And that is when my water decided to break and spray like, I can't even describe. Yes. Spray all over her. Head to toe. I mean, she laughed and said, well, I can honestly say in my experience, this has not happened before.
That is incredible.
So she excuses herself to go change her clothes and says, you're doing great. Just, you know, keep pushing. You've got a little bit of time, but I will be right back. So
And now you have evidence you're doing it right.
Exactly. She was right. I was doing everything right. That's what I needed to happen. What I found out later is that my mother was outside the door just on edge and listening and making sure that I was okay during labor. And she saw the midwife walk out covered. And she was like, you know, checking with the midwife, making sure I was okay. And she was just laughing hysterically. So that helped my mother have some relief too.
That is incredible. So one thing that I was going to tell you, a lot of people don't realize you can actually deliver your baby without your water breaking. It's called an on-call birth. And they come out like in like a water bag.
Wow. Well, I think I maybe have seen like a photo of that before, but it was with a, maybe a C-section, like that they could lift the baby out still in the bag and amniotic sac, but
they can be born vaginally that way.
That is
the
crazy.
The reason they want to break your water is because of that.
Right? Yeah. And the midwife did mention, you know, we could break your water for you, but if there's no real emergency or reason to do it, we, you know, of course prefer to just let it happen when it happens. And so it was just funny that it happened that way.
Oh, famous last words.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So at that point, just a little bit more pushing.
Yeah.
And a little bit of tearing. Which I felt it all. He was born. I guess the only little complication, which really wasn't much of one, is that his cord was tied in a knot. The midwife said that it was pretty much a blessing that he was born when he was born, which is 2 weeks before my due date. She felt like had it been any longer that knot just would have tightened. Cause at that point, she just described that the baby being the size at that point, they don't do a whole lot of rolling around, where it would become untied.
Yeah.
So it was all a blessing the way it worked out. And he was not restricted from anything, that the knot just happened to be loose.
That is awesome.
Yep. Good. And he was only 7 pounds, 11 ounces, which not as huge as we thought he was going to be. That's a very average size. I guess my belly looked huge.
Yeah. I mean, you carry differently. And when we're talking about baby weights, everything that I learned during my last pregnancy, it's crazy. There's really no good way for them to measure a baby you. Like they're taking good educated guesses. It's not out of nowhere, but they can't actually get in there and measure. There can be like endless number of different things factoring into how big you look, how much water is in there. Like
exactly.
It's pretty impressive.
Right? Or how much fat is on your baby, you know? You just don't know how to measure those things, so.
Mm-hmm. No. No, you had your baby.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. I tore a little bit. So during that process, which I really didn't think about after the fact, you know, I knew that I would, of course, feel everything while having the baby. We had some options with our birth plan. I tried to keep an open mind, like I hadn't done this before, so maybe this is going to be too much for me to handle. I just tried to kind of keep in the back of my mind, you know, women have been doing this for however long without anything. And so surely I can do it. And I, you know, just tried my best, but, they did have like a plan B or C if we got in there and it was too much, but I powered through. But I didn't really think about feeling the sutures and the sewing at the afterward. So I got to have Kaler, you know, on my chest immediately. And I just sang to him while they were doing all of that. And that helped keep my mind off of that.
Occupied.
And just focus on him. But
did your husband get to cut the cord?
He did.
That's so fun. So what was the rest of your hospital stay like?
Well, that night, they were full.
Okay.
So we couldn't get to a room right away. So we stayed in labor and delivery for quite a while. But the staff was amazing. We were able, after a while, we were able to go into a very tiny room, where my bed was right next to the recliner where my husband was supposed to sleep, but it wasn't, there wasn't even enough room for it to recline. And, I remember it was very difficult for me to even get to the bathroom. I had to like climb over the recliner to get to it, which was really difficult. But by the second night, because we stayed two nights at the hospital, by the second night, we got in a luxury suite. I mean, there were couches and we had like a corner room of the hospital with windows all around, and they made up for it.
that's a good treatment. How long did you stay?
That was so two nights in the hospital, and it was over Labor Day weekend. So we had to wait a little while for the doctor to come through. We had decided on a circumcision, and so we had to wait a while for the doctor to come and do that,
be available for that,
to be available. And then once that was over, we got to go home.
So what was it like when you got home? What were you expecting versus what actually happened?
So another expectation of mine, this was quite the learning process for me. I just assumed breastfeeding was easy. I mean, everything I ever saw was easy breastfeeding. So I had no idea that it could be difficult. And so my milk didn't fully come in for a couple of days. So I had some colostrum at first. And the nurses explained that all they need at that point, that their stomachs are the size of a grape. And she even had a little clip on her lanyard at the hospital of what size that is. And she said, their little stomach is only this big. And so your colostrum is enough. Your body just produces, you know, what the baby needs, at, you know, and it'll come. So I trusted that. And the milk came a couple days later, but I had a very difficult time waking him up to eat. He slept nonstop, and I could not get him to latch longer than a few seconds, and he would be asleep. So I was basically calling the doctor immediately, like, what's going on? Because he's not eating. Shouldn't he be eating? And
yeah.
What basically turned into us having to go to weigh-ins every week for the first 2 months of his life.
Oh, goodness.
So there were a lot of issues that turned up. First of all, keeping him awake. So mm-hmm. they had me using a cold rag to kind of keep him
yeah.
awake.
And sure he loved that.
Right. Yeah. It was awful. and I went to a lactation consultant at the hospital a couple of times to make sure he was latching correctly. Mm-hmm. They thought he might have had a little bit of a lip tie, but definitely nothing significant that we would need to look into that further.
Yeah.
So that wasn't too much of an issue, according to them. But then what turned into like a never ending cycle, he wasn't getting enough calories to stay awake, but couldn't stay awake to get the calories he needed.
Yeah.
So this was this horrible cycle we were stuck in. They also told me to bring in a sample of my milk mm-hmm. because they wanted to look at the fat content okay. of my milk. And when they looked at that, they said, basically, they called it skim milk.
Okay.
Because it didn't have a lot of fat content, but they said that that can increase over time. So
mm-hmm. question, did they tell you a time of day to take that sample from?
Really don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I really don't think so. I don't recall that being,
that being part of it.
Oh yeah. I don't recall that being part of it. So, I wonder if that mattered. I don't know. Do you know of that?
It can factor into it, that, and mm-hmm. when you do it, before or after a feeding, mm-hmm. Because a lot of times if it's been a while since you've nursed, you'll have a higher fat content. And then later in the day, it kind of reduces slowly and you have a thinner and thinner milk later in the day.
Gotcha.
Not for everybody, but for a lot of people. And you'll even notice if you're bagging it, that your milk yes. earlier in the day is thicker.
Mm, okay.
Yeah,
that might have been part of it. They had me supplement with a syringe, some formula. Yeah. So while he's latched, I had to get this little syringe in the corner of his mouth and kind of squirt some formula in there to help supplement, but also just that waking him up. They mm-hmm. thought that that would help keep him alert. They also wanted me feeding every hour and a half, but it took an hour to feed him. Mm-hmm. So I got a 30-minute break before it was time to start again. Yeah. So,
and that's great for your mental health and your physical exhaustion.
I'm telling you, looking back, I don't know how much of it was exhaustion, hormones, maybe some postpartum. It was a very rough time. And I remember 3 a.m. being like the loneliest time ever. I just felt very alone and like I could not do the one thing I'm naturally supposed to be able to do, feed my baby. And this is supposed to be just a natural thing that's supposed to happen from him and me. And he's not latching. I'm not feeding. It was a mess. And he would definitely be awake at some points because he would be crying, but not eating. It was a mess. I remember one night reading an article on my phone called The Lonely Mommy. And it was basically an article written by a mom who was like, if you are a lonely mommy out there, mm-hmm. you're not alone, that yeah. there's another lonely mommy out there too. And so that really flipped my brain at that point, thinking, here I am, 3 a.m. It's just me and my son, but there's also another lonely mommy out there. And yeah. I'm just gonna have some solidarity with that lonely mommy who doesn't know I exist, but we don't know each other, but it just made me feel not so alone.
Yeah.
So that everything eventually after the first couple of months got way better.
Good.
And I was able to breastfeed for about 7 months.
Okay.
When I went back to work, my supply just dwindled. Mm-hmm. I was pumping twice while I was at work just to get as much as I could. And it just dwindled. So we finished out with formula, as you know, I pumped as long as it would come out and did the best I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, when you go from nursing, I mean, it tapers off a little bit, but when you go from nursing every like 1.5 to like 3 hours to twice over, you know, how long are you at work? Well, your work day might be 8 hours, but then, you know, you've got after work, you've got commute, yes. You've got, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, 7 months is a long time.
Yeah. I was proud that we did that good and yeah. that everything ended up working out, and he ended up feeding great and grew and was the right weight and everything he needed to be. It was just a rough start.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent that it ended well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how long was it before you decided let's try again?
Well, we had the thought and feel of maybe 3 years apart. Mm-hmm. So about 3 years later, we decided to start trying again. And the second time took about 4 months until mm-hmm. we got pregnant. But, you know, I just had a little better mindset going into it.
Yeah.
This might take a while, but the Lord answered prayers before. We believe he'll do it again. And he did. And we found out that we were pregnant. And again, I was still having normal, regular ultrasounds. So I got to see her pretty early too. Mm-hmm. So that was neat. And I had a dream that it was a girl and it turned out to be a girl. And I told my husband going to that appointment, I said, we're kind of hoping for a girl. We have a boy with like a girl. And I said, well, it's going to be a girl. I can just go ahead and tell you. And it was. And that pregnancy was still great. I didn't have much sickness or complications at all. I did, though, I had a lot more pain, I would say, in your hip flexors. Those just tendons right there on your hips. It was painful pretty much all throughout. And if I thought my belly was big the first time, this girl, oh my goodness. I even took pictures throughout Kayler's and then pictures throughout hers, and just even comparing what I looked like. And, you know, she was just, and she ended up being 9 pounds, 7 ounces. When she
oh goodness.
Was born. So yeah. Big girl. But that pregnancy was great too.
The big baby.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me, how was your second pregnancy?
Yeah. So, that second pregnancy was good. And everything went well, same as the first. I mean, nice and easygoing, same type of Braxton Hicks contractions. Everything went very normal and healthy and good. The worst part, I would say, of course, my hip flexors hurting and that pain, leg pain, but at the very end of my pregnancy, Kayler came a couple of weeks early. So I was just kind of prepared for that same thing to happen. Mm-hmm. But 37 weeks, 38 weeks, 39 weeks, I'm at 40. and I had an appointment on my 40th week. And I was like, look, what can we do about this?
What's the plan now?
What's the plan here? And they were like, you know, we just don't induce unless there's a reason. Or they said maybe at 41 to 42 weeks, they would have that discussion. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine going past my due date. And this would be crazy. I was just not comfortable. I was at that point, and I mean, beyond done at that point, you know. And it was July, and I was hot, and I was swollen, and just all the fun things.
And everyone you know is texting you, have you had the baby yet?
Yes, exactly.
No.
Right. So they did say that one thing they could do was the membrane sweep. So they informed me of what that is. I had never heard of that before. So that was an option. And I said, yeah, let's go for it. You know, see if that speeds things along.
Yeah.
And so they did that sweep at that appointment. And then I went into labor just a couple of days after that.
Okay.
And she ended up being born on her due date.
Oh, good.
Which is like, apparently only 5% of babies are born on their due date. So that was
very rare.
Pretty neat. Yeah. So it was perfect timing.
Yeah.
Now the trip to the hospital in that situation,
you were with the same midwife group.
Yes, I was. Okay. I had a wonderful experience the first go around. So I wanted that to be the same thing again. So yes, they were an hour away. So the labor all started on the 4th of July.
Okay.
Fireworks are going off, and it's a great evening with family. And I went to the restroom, and there was a little bit of blood. And I thought, something might be going on. So I was feeling some contractions, and I recognized that these were different contractions. And I told my family as we were leaving that night, I might be seeing you sooner rather than later, just a heads up. So we left that house to go visit my husband's family for the 4th. And, on the way there, I thought, okay, I'm timing these. And if these are still going strong, then this is definitely going to be it.
Yeah.
Well, we get there and my contractions totally stop. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And I just figured, great, this isn't it. And so we have a lovely time there. And then we go home, and it's like 10 o'clock at night. And the contractions came back with a vengeance. And I was like, okay, this is definitely it. But once again, I was like, all right, honey, I'm taking a shower, and please mop the floor. It worked.
We need the clean towels.
It's going to work this time too. Yes. And that's exactly what I did.
Good.
The shower helped. And we had my mother-in-law come over and stay with Kaylor. He was already in bed asleep. But we had prepped him, like, if you ever wake up and mommy and daddy aren't here, but your grandma is here, it's because we're having baby sister. Like, we had to prep him for that. And that's what we did. And she came over, and we left, and speedy, speedy down the road, hazards on. And I'm screaming in the back seat, just like before. But this time, because it was the 4th of July, there were, of course, police officers
everywhere.
So my husband is speeding down the road, and we see blue lights, and they pull us over. And my husband immediately throws his hands out the window, starts yelling back at the police officer, who turns out to be two police officer cars behind us. They're approaching the vehicle, and he's like, my wife's in labor. Everything's fine. We've not been drinking. Like, just need to get to the hospital.
We need to go.
We need to go. And bless their hearts, they were the sweetest police officers ever. They just said, you have got to go slower and get your wife there safely, and we will let you go. They could clearly see what was going on. Yeah. And I would like to say that my husband followed their directions, but he got us there very quickly. I mean, there was no choice about this.
Yeah.
So we get to the hospital, and our midwife failed to mention that only the emergency room is open after hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the parking garage, and we get to the elevator to get across, mm-hmm. and we get to a door of the hospital, and it's locked.
Okay.
And so I see a sign next to the door that says after hours, go to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically kind of double over and say, I cannot walk any further. We're going to have to like call security, like do something.
Yeah.
He found a wheelchair. So he gets me in the wheelchair. Along with our 70-pound suitcase that I had to have with us. So he's pushing me with one hand, wheeling the suitcase with the other, scurrying to find our way back to the emergency room. Well, he comes across another hospital door, and he's like, surely this one is open. And I'm like screaming, go to the emergency room. Like, that's the only open door. And he's like, no, we're trying it. So he tries it. It's locked, obviously. Yeah. And I'm like, there's another sign. Go to the emergency room. Well, at this point, he's like, maybe we should go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Listen to your wife. Well, then he has to wheel me down and across the parking lot. And we're coming up to a curb for the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So his idea is, I'm going to wheel this wheelchair and skip the curb and uh-huh. get her up on the sidewalk, which does not happen. And the wheelchair hits the curb. I go flying out of the wheelchair. And with as much grace as I can muster, landed on my feet.
Oh,
yes, I did. Yes. To which I then doubled over, had a really hard contraction, and he figured out the whole suitcase and wheelchair situation. Then gets me back in the chair, wheels me into the emergency room, and we are stopped by security, where we have to go through the metal detector. Mm-hmm. We have to open the suitcase, let them look inside, make sure we have nothing illegal,
mm-hmm.
and finally make it inside the ER. They took me back to triage, and I was already at 10 centimeters, ready to be pushing. Like, I just need a bed. Put me in a bed. Let me push. This baby's coming. And so they got me up to labor and delivery as quickly as possible. And 30 minutes later, she was here.
Nice.
Yeah. So not a lot of pushing needed. It was just very quick. And she was born at 3 a.m. on the dot.
Aww.
On the dot. 9 pounds, 7 ounces.
9 pounds. Yeah. Good baby. Mm-hmm. When did your water break with her?
Same situation, but not a spray. It was a trickle.
Good for the midwife.
It was during pushing. I mean, same time during pushing. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any tearing with the second one?
Same, maybe mm-hmm. a little bit more, but I basically tore in the same place I had torn the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I had maybe a little bit more inside, tearing more so than with him. I mean, she was huge, so.
Well, and that has a tendency to happen more often with really rapid deliveries.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They come barreling out of there.
Yep. Yep. And I just held her on my chest and sang while they sewed me up and.
But you got your hour.
Mm-hmm. the way that they did things at that hospital, they bring the scale, the everything to mm-hmm. the mom.
Yeah.
So they don't ever have to take the baby out of the room unless you want them to go to the nursery. Mm-hmm. If you're needing sleep or something, I asked that for both children, I asked that they stayed with me the whole time.
Yeah.
So, I just, kept her on my chest as long as I could and fed her right away. My milk on this one, actually, I had milk while pregnant.
Ooh.
So, that was something I didn't expect, but, maybe, I don't know if it was because it was my second one. I don't know if that's a thing that happens, your second time around, but I started, lactating while pregnant at the end of my pregnancy.
So all I know on that is that a lot of times the hormones that you have in, I think toward the end of the first, second trimester will completely cause lactation to stop. So if you're nursing and you get pregnant, you will have a bump. Mm-hmm. But a lot of women do get their milk back in the mm-hmm. last trimester.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Maybe you just never lost it.
I don't know. But I felt like my breastfeeding experience with her was way different. First of all, with my approach. So my first child, I just didn't know what I was doing. So I stayed very scheduled mm-hmm. with him. Of course, they told me to feed every hour and a half because he needed a lot more. But I also just myself in the beginning was, okay, I got to feed at this time and I'm going to feed for this long. And if he's crying a little, well, it's not time to feed yet. So I'm just going to wait to feed you.
Yeah.
Kind of a mentality. Whereas with her, I just fed whenever and she would have cluster feedings or, you know, if she was crying and I thought she was hungry, I fed her.
Yeah.
And it was a much more just relaxed mentality about it. Mm-hmm. And she had no issues eating and, it was just a much better experience much the second better. Time around. Yeah.
Did you wind up doing any kind of supplementation?
Nope. Nothing. I breastfed, totally until I went back to work and it dwindled the same mm-hmm. way it did with him.
Yeah.
I was able to keep at least a few ounces of breast milk, but then I had to start adding in formula at the end of her, you know, before eating solids and things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that experience went a lot better. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the last time you nursed your babies?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What was that like?
Well, it's such a bonding experience. I mean, there's no way to describe it, but just the sweetness of just nursing your baby. It's a closeness that you just have in that small amount of time. I mean, I remember the last of everything, the last time breastfeeding, the last time with any kind of bottle, the last time in the crib, or, you know, just all the little last times that you get with them. That's really special. Yeah.
They're so sweet. How old are they now?
8 and 5.
8 and 5. Have you guys thought about having any more?
Well, so after having Vela, there was this one time shortly after that I was rocking her and Kaylor was there and Benton, my husband, was here. We were just kind of all sitting together and I looked at him and I said, we are complete. Like, mm-hmm. I just have this feeling of wholeness, completeness. Like, this is what our family was always meant to be. And I'm totally content and happy. And he felt the exact same way.
Yeah.
And I feel like that feeling was a blessing in itself because, a year after having my daughter, I found out I had breast cancer.
Okay.
So that BRCA gene mutation that we've been monitoring this whole time, they found breast cancer, but they found it very early. And because of it, I ended up having a double mastectomy.
Okay.
And reconstruction surgery for that, and a total hysterectomy.
Yeah.
So the option of even having naturally, yes, anymore was gone. And I was totally fine with that because I had already felt like this was it. So,
man, it's really great because I'm getting like really solid messages of peace throughout your whole story of every step.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
That is wonderful. I'm so happy for you in that.
Thank you. None of it's easy. And no. I think all of us kind of go into things with different expectations. Mm-hmm. And just finding that peace and understanding mm-hmm. through whatever comes your way. You figure it out and it all works out.
Yeah. Man, mm-hmm. that's huge. So what would you say would be your big takeaway from your experience?
My big takeaway would be you're not alone. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, my faith is a huge part of my journey and my story. And I believe that the Lord is with us always, and He hears every prayer that you pray and sees every tear you cry and every laugh that you laugh. And mm-hmm. you're not alone, even in those moments you feel like you are.
Yeah.
But I also believe you're not alone because there's other lonely mommies out there, just like that article that I read that kind of changed things around for me. And one reason why I totally wanted to do this podcast with you, because I believe all of these stories that we share lets women know they're not alone.
Yeah.
And I love the name of your podcast, The Normal Birth, because it is all normal. It is, no matter how different they are, they're normal. And mm-hmm. so everyone can feel like they are a part of a whole, that they're not alone through any of it. Mm-hmm. So I love that you're getting the message out there to all these women that are listening.
Man, I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. I appreciate you allowing me the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
I love your story so much.
Thank you.
Not just because you made me cry laugh.
me too.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else you want to share?
Whew. I think that covers a lot, but yeah. But thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, let's hop off here and definitely let's keep in touch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Have a good night, Vanna.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Normal Birth Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in being on the show, please send me an email to normalbirthpod@gmail.com.